Kia ora koutou e tēnei atou. Here on, this is R1 News, here on Radio 1, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi 91 FM. Ko kaia tēnei.
Ko Quinton aho.
Coming up on the show today, we have Eileen with the bulletin and weather. We speak to Bryn Ryder of Know Your Stuff about their upcoming drug testing sessions in North Dunedin. We speak to Paralympian journalist and musician Onya Kelly Costello about the End Acceptable Standards of Health Now campaign. And we talk to MP for Dunedin, Dr. David Clark, about how the changes to the Residential Tenancies Act will impact the student rental market. Finally, we speak to Critic Te Arohi editor Fox Mayer about this week's issue of Critic Te Arohi, the art issue. Before all that, here is Belladonna with Love Like This here on R1 News.
This is R1 News here on Radio 1. That was Belladonna with Love Like This. Coming up on the show, we have Bryn Ryder from Know Your Stuff to talk about their upcoming testing services in North Dunedin. But before that, here is Eileen with the bulletin and weather.
The Radio 1 91 FM news headlines.
Tēnā koutou, ko Eileen tēnei. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern has rejected claims that the Labour Party is soft on crime, following yesterday's announcement of $500 million in funding for crime prevention. Speaking to Morning Report, Ardern said that Labour was no less firm than National has been on crime, and that the focus needs to be on prevention and rehabilitation. Yesterday's funding is expected to be spent over the next 4 years, specifically focused on tackling gun crime and organised crime, as well as boosting tactical response training. National Party spokesperson Mark Mitchell says the funding will not be effective and that police should be given more agency to deal with criminals. Ardern says tougher penalties alone will not serve as a deterrent, particularly for young offenders. The Australian Labor Party is just leading in polls, less than 2 weeks away from the Australian federal elections. The most recent two-party poll from Ipsos suggests Labor is sitting at 57% preference, compared to current Prime Minister Scott Morrison's coalition government at 43%. Early voting in the Australian federal election starts today. A small series of earthquakes have occurred overnight on the east coast of the North Island. As of 9 a.m, GeoNet reported 15 earthquakes ranging from 2.6 to 4.3 on the Richter scale around Whakatane. The largest, a 4.3 which struck at a depth of 5 kilometres and was 10 kilometres north of Whakatane, may have been felt as light shaking in Murupara, Opotiki, Rotorua, Tauranga, Te Kaha and Matawai. And that was the bulletin on the R1 News. Now, the weather.
Radio 1 91 FM weather.
I tēnei rā, expect a high of 15 in Ōtipoti and a low of 9. Expect a few showers around afternoon, turning to rain this evening and gradually developing southerlies. Āpōpō, look forward to a high of 12 and a low of 6, with showers throughout the day and southerlies clearing in the afternoon.
That was Eileen with the bulletin and weather. Coming up next, we have Bryn Ryder from Know Your Stuff to talk about their testing initiatives in North Dunedin. But before that, here is Wallace with Orchard Care here on R1 News.
Yes, I am free.
You are listening to R1 News here on Radio 1, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi, 91 FM. That was Wallace with Orchard Care, and it is 11 minutes past 11. Drug testing organisations are back in North Dunedin this month, providing free and legal drug testing services accessible for all students. Know Your Stuff are a volunteer organisation who provide both reagent and spectroscopic testing for substances so that you can know what you're really taking. We're joined in studio now by Know Your Stuff's regional manager, Bryn Ryder, to talk about what services they can provide this May. Kia ora, Bryn. It's great to have you in the studio.
Kia ora, Quinton. Thank you.
So when is Know Your Stuff in Dunedin coming up?
A lot more regularly than we used to be. We're running every first Friday of the month out of OUSA Clubs and Socks, and every third Friday over in Kaikaraia Valley at Synergy Wellness. You can keep an eye on our socials for the exact times of those clinics and let us know if they don't work for you, because we're constantly kind of evolving for what works for people. We'll also be at OUSA the night before Hyde and on site at Hyde Street across from Liquorland next to Are You OK? We're only promoting these clinics about 2 weeks ahead of time at the moment because of COVID and making the call as to whether it's a good idea or not, but we got lots planned.
Sounds like a busy schedule. What services can Know Your Stuff provide to students?
Three main things. Testing a wee tiny bit of your sample, whatever you've got, to see what's in it. Also giving you advice on how you choose to take that. And working out overall what stuff is going around in Dunedin to issue alerts if we need to. You don't actually have to have a sample to bring us either. If you've just got questions, come down and see us.
Excellent. And so that kind of leads into my next question, is what information can be provided by Know Your Stuff from these testings?
Yeah. Well, everyone sort of knows that we can give you a better idea of whether it contains the stuff that it was supposed to, or if it contains other psychoactive substances that you need to be aware of. We can give you tips on staying safer while consuming those substances, however you choose to do so. We can also use that information to see what's going around, how much of everyone's gear is what it's meant to be, and if we found anything really dodgy, let everyone know. Also that people can make better decisions around taking their substances.
And so can you provide us with some statistics for testing results this year?
Nearly. our data team are working away at the moment to get the 2021 season report out. You can keep an eye on our socials for when that hits. You can also jump on our website, knowyourstuff.nz, and we've got a cool little interactive app that you can use to browse all the data.
Excellent. And so what legislative changes would you like to see made to improve the services that Know Your Stuff can offer?
We have had some good changes recently, particularly our service becoming legal to exist. but there's still a long way to go. The entire Misuse of Drugs Act and the way our health system is educated and structured, it criminalizes and stigmatizes people using substances in a way that makes it very hard for us to get to them at all. A health-based approach to reducing harm associated with substance use has to include looking at it with less of a punitive lens before we can really assist people who are experiencing the most harm and help people make safer choices. And everyone can participate in that. Write to your Member of Parliament, tell them that's what we want.
And so do you have any advice for partygoers over the next month or two?
Yeah, a few sort of key ones, particularly for the times. If something has been in someone else's nose, like a straw or a banknote, do not put it in yours. You can catch a staph infection or COVID. We can give you tools to give to your mates and stop that being a thing. Mixing any of alcohol, ketamine, benzodiazepines, or opioids can tank your respiratory drive, and that can kill you. So try not to do it. Antidepressants make MDMA work really poorly, so taking more MDMA to chase that effect can give you serotonin syndrome or kill you. Those are probably the main ones, but we've got lots of other tips that we can give you, so come on down and see us.
Excellent. Thank you very much for joining us in the studio, Bryn.
Thank you.
That was Bryn Ryder from Know Your Stuff talking about their drug testing services in Otipoti this month. Coming up right now, we have Porpoise with Do What You Want here on R1 News on Radio 1.
Realize that I'm more you. You're like the rush before the start of a fight. A funeral that's passing you by. What a shame that I bite. You live and let die. There's blood on my skin. You light up a grin. Together we go down in the dark. Fall into your car and bleed on the floor. You tell me that I'm making you born. Oh, what a shame, what a shame. But I'll take all the blame.
Crazy, but I like it. Can think straight. Pointless, trying to fight it. Oh, and I want it. Don't knock it till you try it. Want it, and I ride it.
My head can justify the shakes and the sweats.
This is R1 News with Quinton and Kaya here on Radio 1 Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi 91 FM. The time is 24 minutes past 11 and you just heard Julius Black with Together We Go Down in the Dark. Before that we had Porpoise with Do What You Want. Migration and the rights of migrants is an ever pertinent topic throughout politics and activism. However, the intricacies of those rights can vary from person to person. End Acceptable Standards of Health Now is a campaign led by Paralympian, journalist and musician Anya Kelly Costello, actioned by a group of migrants affected by the Acceptable Standard of Health, or ASH. The Acceptable Standard of Health regulates whether migrants are allowed entrance to Aotearoa based on factors such as cognitive and physical ability, to preempt an overload of pressure on the country's health and education systems. End ASH Now says this process denies residents' rights to a wide array of people who Anya and other activists explain offer a breadth of assets spanning far beyond their financial value. Anya and End ASH Now member Carolina Vasquez told R1 News about their experiences of the Acceptable Standard of Health and what they say needs to change.
The health requirements established by Immigration New Zealand are intensive, demanding an acceptable standard of health, one which will not impose significant costs or pressure on health or education systems. Applicants can fail to gain permanent residency in Aotearoa if their health conditions will likely require over $41,000 of services, or if they're likely to qualify for any special education services funded by the ongoing resources scheme, for example. Anya, on your website you cite three factors contributing to the ableism of the current immigration process: policies, prejudices and systems that have, as you describe, failed the disabled community. Some of these policies I've just described, but the prejudices associated cannot be researched in the same black and white way as policies. As people involved and active in the disabled community, what sort of prejudices have you seen disabled migrants facing?
Kia ora, thanks for that excellent question, Kaya. That policy that you've just described, the acceptable standard of health for ASH requirements, what it does is reduce disabled migrants and also migrants with health conditions and even with high BMI to a dollar figure. So it just looks at economic value, basically. It's supposed to look at also contributions and ties to the country. But even if you take factors like that into account, what you're saying is you're setting up disabled migrants in a way where they have to prove their worth. So people who are sick or who have disabilities are being discriminated against. Their human rights are being breached because of these policies. And I just point out as well that this is also affecting refugees, particularly convention refugees and community sponsorship refugees, who are also being subjected to these arbitrary requirements that are leading to so much uncertainty and stress.
Have you encountered any viewpoints that perhaps aren't distinctly prejudiced in their own right, but instead seek to justify some of the prejudices you've described?
Because the governments have, for a long time, successive governments have not invested sufficiently in education and health. There's this idea that, we need to, quote, look after our own first. But actually what we've seen, particularly with the pandemic, is that the government can, with the political will, make really substantial budget decisions really quickly. So underfunding of health and education is absolutely something that the government can address. And changing migration policies by ending the acceptable standard of health requirements and ending the legal framework upholding them is absolutely something that the government can address with political will.
What are some of the other systems and policies contributing to an inaccessible immigration system?
I think part of the issue is that the information about the policies is really difficult to get at and to understand. Even for me reading it as a well-educated native English speaker, it's not straightforward at all to figure out these requirements. And the system thrives off of leaving people in limbo, long wait times, uncertainty, making you apply and reapply for visas. So the entire system is set up to make it as difficult and as stressful for migrants as possible. And I'd just point out that this also leads to worse health outcomes because people are afraid to go to the doctor. People are afraid to seek help when they're having, you know, all of the distress that comes with this policy on a mental health side. So, you know, even though the Ardern government kind of claims to govern with kindness and compassion, these systems and policies are totally the opposite of this. You know, having a list of conditions also that are deemed to cost too much. Again, it's just this whole narrative around migrants only being valuable if they add economic value and not recognizing our strengths and our contributions, which we all make to, you know, to our schools and workplaces and neighborhoods and communities.
And you've each experienced the migration process, Anya as a disabled person and Catalina as the parent of a disabled person. Have you experienced or heard anecdotes of any ableist barriers to migration?
Catalina, do you want to share a bit about your experience as well?
Yes, of course. Hello, my name is Catalina. We are from Chile. We moved to New Zealand in 2015 because I'm looking for a better future for myself, for my family, for my kids, because she needs more support. We realized, supposedly she doesn't have acceptable standard of health because she needs a special education. She needs a cognitive disability. In this moment, in 2015, we fight with immigration for around 1 year. For 1 year, she had to leave the country because her visa was declined. After 3 years, I got one interview for a minister of immigration. We got a student visa for her. But now, again, we have issues because she needs a special education. She is a very high cost for this government. That was the word that the sense that they use it. She's a completely healthy. She doesn't have any medication or different doctor, nothing. She's amazing. We tried for too many years, until now around 7 years, to try to call New Zealand home, to try to be stable here. But it's hard. It's very hard because every single thing that you try to explain to immigration, they don't understand, you know, because they have one very close policy.
And you are currently in the process of handing over a petition to an MP in a plea for your daughter to stay. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, of course. We applied in May last year for a new student visa for her. Until now, we don't have answer about this application. In April, she got one special visa under Section 61 because she was illegal for a little bit short time. So we applied for residency finally, but we have again the big problem. Her residency and our residency will be declined for her condition. So we make this petition because we need one exception again, show to the immigration and show to the government we are responsible person, we are hard worker, we make a long contribution for this country. The petition is we want to show everyone the situation and ask for support from the community and the rest of the important people in this country, show the reality, you know.
Unfortunately, these sort of anecdotes aren't hard to come by. In late 2021, Aisling Smith missed out on a medical waiver due to her medication costs and had to resort to creating an online petition advocating her right to stay in Aotearoa, as her residency application was rejected in 2019. Disability advocate Juliana Carvalho faced a similar situation last year, resorting to overstaying in the country, becoming liable for deportation so that she might become eligible to appeal on humanitarian grounds. Carvalho describes the process as humiliating and ridiculous. Do you think the fact that disabled migrants are needing to resort to online pleas for help is negatively impacting the social perception of these groups, feeding into a narrative that frames disabled people as helpless?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I think it's particularly feeding into the narrative that disabled people are a burden, a financial drain, and it's just something that completely goes against our human rights. And one thing I'd add around the fact that it doesn't recognize our strengths is that Juliana Carvalho's petition, which was not only for her to be able to stay in the country, but also to change these policies and uphold the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities as well. When that petition went to Parliament, it went to the Education and Workforce Select Committee, who made a recommendation around having the acceptable standard of health reviewed to align with a strengths-based approach. And despite this recommendation, that's something that the government are not actually following through on. They're doing a much more limited review of the cost threshold. But basically, the system as it stands is remaining intact. So I think we absolutely need to move towards that strengths-based approach and uphold human rights as well.
So you've just described this a little bit in your answer, but what do you think the government could do now to make migration more accessible? And what could be done in the future to ensure migration is an entirely prejudice-free process?
There's so much around wider systems that is really important to look into, because we have been focusing mainly on the ASH policy because it's so prejudicial. But the government can absolutely start now by scrapping the acceptable standard of health requirements and stopping discriminating against migrants on disability or health or BMI, any of these grounds. Stop discriminating against refugees also on these grounds. And also Green MP Ricardo Menendez March has drafted a bill recently to give migrants access to their human rights via the Human Rights Act, because currently migration decisions, which fall under the Migration Act, they are exempt or you can't complain about them if they discriminate against you on human rights grounds. So when I'm talking about, you know, our human rights being taken away, this is what I'm talking about. So the government can absolutely support that bill to remove the legal framework, which essentially upholds the acceptable standard of health requirements, or which allows them to exist in the first place. But if the government is going to do a review, which they're, you know, they're currently have committed to reviewing the cost threshold. So at the moment, it's $41,000 over 5 years. And there's a list of a very long list of disabilities and health conditions which are assumed to meet this threshold, or to probably meet this threshold. If the government's going to do that review, then it absolutely needs to widen the scope of it to look at, you know, recommendations that the independent monitoring mechanism, which keeps an eye on whether New Zealand is upholding the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. They've actually said this law needs to be completely reworked and reformed with disabled people in a way that upholds the Disability Rights Convention. So if the government's going to do a review, that's the review that we need to have happen. And people affected by the ASH requirements, as well as disabled people's organisations, and, you know, the Human Rights Commission and other groups which would have relevant expertise, need to be able to input. And we need a much more, you know, public and transparent process around that review.
The zeitgeist of our time is arguably defined by COVID-19 and the outbreak's implications for every sector of society. Immigration and travel are prominent among these. Do you think disabled immigrants with weaker immune systems might be concerned about the potential for contracting COVID-19 on planes and other transportation systems, adding to the stress of dealing with immigration and potential deportation?
Yeah, I do. And I think that the stress of potentially contracting COVID goes beyond the transportation system to where you're actually getting deported to as well.
This kind of situation is very stressful. It's a lot of money. It's a stress. It's the more every time when we have holidays, for example, we never enjoy a lot because we don't know what happened next month, next week. We need to give money for lawyer. We need to give money for something. So I think it's a very hard time, and the mental health is horrible. The situation is very bad. Not only me, it's a lot of people. It's not only my daughter in the same situation, and they are human beings. They are no numbers.
We really do need to come together and for allies to also join this campaign with us to change the policy and to support all those currently affected. So please do support us. And yeah, together we can urge the government to do what is right, recognize the human rights of all migrants, recognize our strengths and contributions, and scrap the acceptable standard of health policy.
Thank you.
That was Anya Kelly-Costello and Carolina Vasquez from End Acceptable Standards of Health Now, talking about their campaign to remove the acceptable standards of health barrier to migration. Coming up on the show, we speak to Dr. David Clark, MP for Dunedin, about the changes to Residential Tenancies Act that will be affecting students this year. Following that, we speak to Critic Te Arohi editor Fox Mayer about the art issue of Critic this week. Right now, we have Lady Hawk with My Love here on R1 News.
Rather be hurt than be ignored. I'm running in circles.
You are listening to R1 News here on Radio 1, Te Reo Irirangi, Kotahi 91 FM. It is 11:42 and that was Lady Hawk with My Love. At any point throughout the show, you can get in touch with us by texting us on 0212-RADIO-1. That is 0212-272-3461, and you can just let us know what you think of the show or leave us with any questions or comments. Changes to the Residential Tenancies Act that came into effect from February last year are affecting most students for the first time. These changes have caused a stir within property managers and tenancy circles alike, with people still finding their ways through their new rights and responsibilities. These requirements give tenants much more power than they used to have, and they mean that tenants gain more security in their living arrangements at the end of their fixed-term tenancies. Property managers, however, have expressed concerns at these changes, given it means fewer flats will be listed for rent for 2023, as early as they usually are. We spoke to MP for Dunedin, Dr. David Clark, about how these changes will impact tenants and property managers in Dunedin.
Perfect. All right. So I'll just start and work my way through those list of questions. So this is the first year that most students will be experiencing the changes to the Residential Tenancies Act that came into force in February last year, including the changes to the Residential Tenancies Act that mean tenants can choose to stay at the end of their fixed-term tenancy. Do you think that these changes are beneficial for the student rental market in Dunedin, and if so, why?
Yeah, well, I do, and fixed-term tenancies convert to periodic tenancies from now on, and that gives students more choices as to what happens at the expiry of a fixed-term tenancy. They can continue a fixed-term tenancy if it suits them, but they won't get caught out, you know, if they have personal health issues, finances, or grades even, or any reason that they can't return to study. That won't affect the nature of their agreement, i.e. they won't be locked in unless they've chosen to. And in the past, what has happened was from time to time, people had signed up early, circumstances had changed, and they were left holding the baby. So I think this is a really good step for students because it gives them more power in the negotiation and the ability to reach the arrangement that suits them and give them a bit more certainty around things.
And so that leads into my next question then, which was that one property manager I spoke to claimed that these laws actually provided more uncertainty for renters and landlords. What is your response to this as MP for Dunedin?
We haven't seen any evidence of problems with these changes to tenure, and again, I'd just state that students now have more choices as to what happens at the end of the fixed-term tenancy. If they've signed up once, they'll be able to choose to continue a tenancy as fixed-term if that's what suits them. The landlords, likewise, can, if they are aware that the tenancy is ending, they can choose to fill a post over summer or sign someone else up. But we think that renters ought to be able to have the ability to stay on if they want to, and that a bit more flexibility and a bit more control in the situation. So this protects them, and that gives students more choices.
And this property manager claimed that these changes could push rents up as a result of the restrictions on people maybe staying. What is your take on this?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of factors that affect rent, but the primary factor is supply and demand. That's the way it works in the market.
Excellent, thank you. And so last week, R1 News revealed that Edinburgh Realty had violated the Residential Tenancies Act by sending an email to their tenants asking them to re-sign their flats or express their intention to leave in a period well before the deadline set out by these changes. Do you think that property managers have a responsibility to understand the Residential Tenancies Act? And also, do you think that property managers need to be more heavily regulated?
Well, property managers absolutely have a responsibility to understand the Residential Tenancies Act. They are there to be professionals, to run a business. All landlords, but especially property managers, should know and understand their legal obligations and actively be seeking to meet those obligations. Now, in general, landlords can ask tenants to re-sign tenancy agreements at any time during the tenancy, and then tenants, for their part, can choose whether to re-sign or not. And tenants are under no obligation at all to accept or respond to a letter like the one that they receive. The landlord certainly can't threaten retaliatory termination of the tenancy if tenants don't accept their letter. Landlords can't purport to give notice to terminate a tenancy unlawfully. But having said that, I would encourage tenants to be in touch with their landlords to sort out issues as they arise. It's a relationship, and it's always advisable for people to try and ensure they have as good a relationship as they can with their landlord. And in respect of should the property managers be more heavily regulated, Te Tua Papa Kura Kāinga, the Ministry of Housing and Urban Development, recently consulted on proposals to introduce an occupational regulation regime for residential property managers. And those proposals basically are intended to promote public confidence in the delivery of residential property management services and protect the interests ultimately of both property owners and tenants. So that's a proposal at this stage.
And when is that proposal looking to make traction or to go through to the next stages?
I haven't got the timelines on that. I apologise. I can find out and come back to you.
That is quite all right. Thank you. And what do you think of the state of the Dunedin rental market for students generally?
Well, you know, I've been aware of the rental market for a very long time since I was a student myself. The challenge always is for people new to being tenants to recognise that they have some rights and responsibilities and to know what those are. And you know, landlords generally have been in the business a while and often know the lay of the land. And so, I mean, I'd have to say this interview and the fact that we're discussing what the rights of tenants are is a good thing, because when you're new to something, it can take you a wee while to wrap your head around what the opportunities are and how the law is shaped to assist to make sure that tenants are getting a fair deal. That's the reason why we've made these changes, to make sure that students have more choice, that they are not turfed out unfairly. There are reasons a landlord can end a tenancy, and those include making, if they're going to make a property available for sale, if they're going to do extensive alterations where it'd be impractical to live in, if they're going to demolish the house, and or if a member of their family intends to move in. But those are very specific reasons. They can't threaten tenants with their removal if they don't play along to the way the rules used to be. So this just gives students more choices. The quality of housing underneath has improved immensely over recent decades, but there are cases where landlords haven't met their obligations, and tenants should know that they can dispute things where they're not fair. They can then reach out to a dispute resolution service like tenancy services for mediation or the tenancy tribunal. And in fact, if people are not complying with their obligations, if landlords aren't doing what they ought to, they can also report serious or ongoing breaches to the tenancy services compliance and investigation team, as they're called, to monitor and enforce compliance with the Residential Tenancies Act 1986. So there are a whole lot of avenues available to support tenants, but it's just that often when people are new as tenants, they don't know what their rights are, and it can take a wee while to realise that there are people there to support you if the landlord's behaving unreasonable. I have to say, most landlords are reasonable. They want tenants who are happy and to pay the rent regularly, but for those who aren't, completely understandable that they should be able to exert their rights in response.
And final question for you, David, a little bit off topic, but as MP for Dunedin, do you think that the winter energy payment would be beneficial for students?
Look, the winter energy payment is there currently for people on fixed incomes, but it doesn't, as you allude to, support those on student allowance, student loan living costs. It can be triggered for those who are on job seeker support, student hardship, which is the main benefit. And of course, students, I have to say, live on very modest means. So that is why we've increased student support over recent years. And of course, any future support would, I'm sure, be welcomed by students.
Excellent. Those are all my questions for you today.
That was MP for Dunedin Dr. David Clark on the changes to the Residential Tenancies Act affecting students for the first time this year. We're joined in the studio now by Critic Te Arohi editor Fox Mayer to talk about this week's issue. Kia ora, Fox. Great to have you in the studio.
Thank you for having me.
So I've got two questions about the actual physical copy of The Critic this week. Your paper, Glossy This Week, is that new or is that, like, it's obviously new, but is that to stay or is that a one-off?
I'm afraid it probably won't be to stay. Mm-hmm. Our printers had a surplus of that paper. They offered it to us this week at no extra charge, and we figured it's Art Week. People might want some glossy, colory photos for Art Week, so we popped it in this week.
What are your thoughts on it? Do you like the squeak when you turn the pages?
I like the way it looks. It made it really difficult to carry around stacks of it because it's so slippery, so it was falling everywhere, which was not ideal. But it looked. I thought it looked good.
Nice. And my other question is the cover art with the KFC bucket. Are they original recipe or Wicked Wings?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think because it's Saturn on the cover, it's a Goya painting, so I feel like he would want Wicked Wings just based off of the vibe of that original painting.
You know? I think I'd probably have to agree with you on that. Yeah. And so then my other question, your editorial is defining art. Can you define art for me?
Well, when I put it in, I don't know who said it originally to me, but I don't know if they said it originally themselves, but they said that art is like pornography. You know it when you see it. I think that's true. I think you know art when you see it. Mm-hmm. So I was extra thankful for all the people who submitted their art this week, and like pornography, I knew it when I saw it.
And so, I mean, you talked about the Richardson building there too. Do you think that's art, or do you think it's catastrophic? Or could
well,
it be both?
I think you can be both. You know, art doesn't have to be good to be art. It just has to be something that the artist put passion and energy into and developed as a person while they were doing it. You can develop negatively. So, right? Can't you?
I think so.
In terms of submissions, was there anything notable stand out? Do you have a personal favorite?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there were heaps of submissions, which was great. We always love to see submissions. We always welcome it. There were a couple of non sort of painting or drawing ones, like physical art, one of which was the what do you call that when you sort of sew
embroidery?
Yeah, it was like it was an embroidered spates. Yeah, that was fantastic. That was one of the coolest things I've seen in a long time, so shout out to the artist there. But yeah, no, keep the submissions coming. Even if it's not Art Week, we'd love to see them.
And on a slightly different note from the art theme, there was a bit of a double feature of two Castle Street exposés on page 6.
Yeah.
Critic has identified the ever-elusive tree planters, but you're now faced with a slightly more risque culprit. Will Critic keep investigating the second story?
Oh, yeah, we'll sniff them out. shouldn't be too hard to find. You know, it's classic Castle Street stuff, right? You know, somebody taking a poo on someone's car. as long as it keeps happening, we're going to keep trying to find who it was. Maybe it's multiple people. You know, maybe it's not just one person. It could just be a pastime, I suppose. In terms of the tree person, yes, we have identified them. I would love to get them in sort of a catfish-style documentary and see if we can put
Amazing.
Them in touch with their victim.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining us in the studio, Fox. Pleasure as always. That was Critic Te Arohi editor Fox Mayer on this week's issue of Critic Te Arohi, the art issue. This has been R1 News here on Radio 1. Ko Quintin Tiene.
Ko Kaya Aho.
And we leave you in the capable hands of Christian Tucker with Fantasy featuring Zexy. You can tune into R1 News weekdays from 11 till 12 here on Radio 1.
Cool.
You think that it was fantasy, you think that it was all a dream, the way things happened in when she turned in history. You think that it was fantasy, you think that it was all a dream, the way things happened in when she turned in history. I know just when to go and close my eyes. Cause if I do, I'll miss the things passing by. I know just when to go and close my eyes. Cause if I do, I'll miss the things passing by.
I'm all talk. Thankfully, that's what rap is. What actually happened? I got wrapped in my bad habits. I'll speak about myself. I've been thinking all about you. I'm emotional to Frank Ocean. Tornadoes inside these rooms. And you should rather shoot my shot and brick and hit and miss you. I know it. Just grab the tissues. The boots too big and the shoes too fit you. If you're superficial, we're not looking for advice. People don't want to hear it. Let's scratching like it's in lice. For the boys and the girls, see, it's a poisonous world. Toying with everything, pressuring. Never found me a pearl. Never found it apparent. Apparel's hiding my vices. My appearance is hiding everything that's lying inside. And I'm lying myself. I need some help. My friends up my Nike laces, the way they won't hang out. So find me in different places or faceless. I'm independent and the pen and all these letters in my head. Let me create and go again.
You think that it was all a dream? The way things are happening. Won't you turn it in and answer me? I know just what to do. I close my eyes. Cause if I do, I'll miss the things that I sometimes.
I got two birthdays, one for my mom and when I first prayed. So what's a birthday? To a first place, forget what you say. Today is one day, a day will be my B-day. You heard me with this wordplay, been making my home a workplace. Lately, I've been feeling like a lady. And lay awake to the lady, and school comes and then I'm late again. Not hating, I'm just waiting and let go of those who drag me down. And burden on my shoulders like hand-me-downs. I'll be out, still handed to God. Every day feels like a new plan. Do a lot to myself, cause when they're watching me, I'm true man. Shim, you're not almighty, but carry me please. I've been sitting inside the university just selling these CDs. I've made so many bad moves that this album's less of a risk. Rather speak out my emotions and let them out on my wrist. As simplistic as this, it's not these lyrics you'll miss. I kill a verse and not a dream, cause this world is my
image. You think that it was fantasy? You think that it was all a dream? The way things are happening, won't you turn it in and answer me? You think that it was fantasy? You think that it was all a dream? The way things are happening, won't you turn it into history? I know just when to go and close my eyes. Cause if I do, I'll miss the things passing by. I know just when to go and close my eyes. Cause if I do, I'll miss the things passing by. Fantasy.
That was a Radio 191 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.